We're a few minutes after schedule, so we'll just begin. Nice kirtan already. We're beginning a new chapter. Feels thrilling. Chapter 12. The age of Krishna has changed. Let's go. Well, we'll hear some. The childhood pastimes of Krishna are now completed. That was chapter 11. And it's now his Kumar age, where I'll read the chapter summary, Canto 10, chapter 12. This chapter describes in detail Krishna's pastime of killing Agasura. One day, Krishna wanted to enjoy a picnic within the forest. And therefore, he went out early into the forest with the other cowherd boys, accompanied by their respective groups of calves. While they were enjoying their picnic, Agasura, younger brother of Putana and Bakasura, appeared there, desiring to kill Krishna and his companions. That's a demon for you. The demon, who had been sent by Kamsa, assumed the form of a python. This is Prabhupada's writing. Expanding himself to the length of 8 miles, and the height of a mountain, his mouth seeming to extend from the surface of the earth to the heavenly planets. Having assumed this feature, Agasura lay on the road. Krishna's friends, the cowherd boys, thought that the demon's form was one of the beautiful spots of Vrindavan. Thus they wanted to enter within the mouth of this gigantic python. The gigantic figure of the python became a subject for their sporting pleasure, and they began to laugh, confident that even if this figure were dangerous, Krishna was there to protect them. In this way, they proceeded toward the mouth of the gigantic figure. Paragraph. Krishna knew everything about Agasura, and therefore he wanted to forbid his friends to enter the demon's mouth. But in the meantime, all the cowherd boys, along with their groups of calves, entered the mouth of that gigantic figure. Krishna was waiting outside, and Agasura was waiting for Krishna, thinking that as soon as Krishna entered, he would close his mouth so that everyone would die. While waiting for Krishna, he refrained from swallowing the boys. In the meantime, Krishna was thinking of how to save the boys and kill Agasura. Thus he entered the mouth of the gigantic Asura, and when he was within the demon's mouth, along with his friends, he expanded his body to such an extent that the Asura suffocated and died. After this, Krishna, by casting his nectarian glance upon his friends, brought them back to life. And with pleasure, they all came out unhurt. Thus, Krishna encouraged all the demigods and they express their pleasure and happiness. For a crooked, sinful person, there is no scope for Sayuja Mukti, or becoming one with the effulgence of Krishna. But because the Supreme Personality of Godhead entered the body of Agasura, by his touch this demon got the opportunity to merge into the existence of the Brahman effulgence and thus attain Sayuja Mukti. When this pastime was performed, Krishna was only 5 years old. 1 year later, when he was 6 years old, and he stepped into the Pogunda age, this pastime was disclosed to the inhabitants of Braja. They didn't tell him till 1 year later, and there's a reason. Because Krishna was the cowherd boys for that 1 year. And when they came back 1 year later, hey, guess what Krishna did today? Parikshit Maharaj inquired, why is it that this pastime was disclosed only after 1 year? And yet the inhabitants of Braja thought that it had been performed that very day? With this question, the 12th chapter ends. Means chapter 13 comes the answer. So now, verse 1 from chapter 12. Shukadeva Goswami continued, O King, one day, Quachit, one day, Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic in the forest. Having risen early in the morning, he blew his bugle made of horn and woke all the cowherd boys and calves with its beautiful sound. Then Krishna and the boys, keeping their respective groups of calves before them, proceeded from Brajabhumi to the forest. It's very interesting commentary, so get your notebooks out because it's really involved. Vishwanath writes, the 12th chapter describes Krishna playing with his friends and Agasura. When the friends entered the mouth of Agasura, Krishna followed them and, enlarging his body, killed the demon. Paragraph. One day, Quachit, Krishna went out, desiring to take a meal in the forest. Only Krishna's name is mentioned, indicating that Rohini, by force, kept Balaram at home in order to bathe him and perform auspicious rites on his birthday. So very soon is Balaram's appearance day, but you'll hear later the commentary doesn't say that was the occasion. Some say it's his birthday. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary. Well, just before I read what he says, there is this. We've been hearing Gopal Champu, where this amazing, poetic, beautiful pictures of Krishna's pastimes are being described in such a nice way. And now here's another side. We're going to hear Jiva Goswami is like super Shastra, ready for taking on opposition parties. And it turns out, we'll hear as we go along, it's not impersonalists, it's Madhvites. Some followers of Madhva take objection to 3 chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10. This is one of them, chapter 12, 13, and 14. 13 and 14 have to do with what? Brahma Vimohan Leela. And for Madhva followers, Brahma Madhva, they don't like that chapter. What? Brahma becomes bewildered? It's interpolation, this and that and the other thing. So they have their hands on their hips and saying scholarly things. So he and Sanatana Goswami are going to address it. Jiva Goswami doesn't say Madhvas. He just says some people. And their argument is interpolation means either kind of like it just was inserted at a later point in time. It's not part of the original text. So they just like disregard it or call it a bad name or something. They even count the number of chapters differently. The Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses and so many chapters, and they just discount three chapters. And this is the first one of them. Because it leads into the Brahma Vimohan Leela. And they have their reasons, as any scholar will have his reasons for saying the scholarly thing that he says. And Jiva Goswami is taking them on. And Sanatana Goswami does it a little softer. But Jiva Goswami doesn't, you know, he covers all bases. So here we go. May the astonishing Lord who shines because of astonishing form, qualities, and activities be merciful to me. In three chapters, these ones that the Madhvas don't like, in three chapters, Shukadev Goswami describes further pastimes of the Kumara age. He hasn't become the Pogonda age yet. First, he describes the killing of Agasura. Okay. I do not see why some people do not accept chapters 12 through 14 and the statements concerning Putana, Canto 10, chapter 6, verses 35 through 40. I'm going to read them shortly. And same chapter 6, text 44. Where it is stated that Putana was liberated. So Madhvas don't like that also. Since the stories are available in all places and there are explanations of them in ancient and modern commentaries such as, I don't know who these people are, Vasanabhasha. That apparently that's a name of a commentary. Sambandhokti, Vidvat Kama Denu, Shukha Manohara, and Paramahansa Priya. If the chapters are not authoritative, based on proofs in one's own sampradaya, he doesn't say the Madhvas. Sanatana does. The opposite conclusion can also be reached by proofs from other sampradayas which accept it. So match this sampradaya and their proofs against that sampradaya and their proofs. Who wins? So we can't accept just because some sampradaya says. These jiva can't accept. Paragraph. Some will argue that the names of Agha, Bit, well, here the explanation, the Sanskrit meaning, or Mura, Bit, are not seen in the Bhagavatam, and therefore the story of Agasura is interpolated. This is not an acceptable argument, for it is said in the Bhagavatam, and he quotes the verse, Canto 3, Chapter 15, where it says Agha Bit. Agabedo. So the translation here, those who hear the topics other than the glorification of Agabit gives the meaning, just a moment. Those who hear topics other than the glorification of Agabit, unworthy topics which destroy intelligence, cannot enter Vaikuntha. Canto 3, chapter 15. Here's the BBT translation of that verse. This is Prabhupada's translation. It is very much regrettable that unfortunate people do not discuss the description of the Vaikuntha planets, but engage in topics which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence. Agha, beda, meaning destroyer of sin. So agha, sin. Agha beda, means destroyer of sin. It has been used in the Bhagavatam. So come on, Sampradaya followers over there. Why are you saying this? It's right there. The Bhagavatam, Canto 3. Nor can one say that the pastime does not occur in lists of the pastimes in the Bhagavatam. In other words, there are places where lists of pastimes are described within the Bhagavatam itself, lists and lists and lists. But there are such lists, and he presents it, just hang on. Since Sridhar Swami in various places refers to this pastime. To say that there are 332 chapters of Bhagavatam with omission of three chapters, 12, 13, 14. They just reduced the number of chapters from 335 to 332, saying those are interpolated, we dismiss them. Is not acceptable to Sridhar Swami, nor should anything be omitted anywhere else. So now here's some technical things. In Sridhar Swami's commentary, he mentions the length of the Bhagavatam, and here's the Sanskrit. Dva trimshat trishatam ya yasya vilasat shaka. So when Sridhar Swami writes like this, he does not mention that the three chapters are not included, or that three are to be omitted, because he has commented on all the chapters and all the verses in the phrase dva trim shat trishatam. The meaning is actually 32 plus 3 and 300. He goes into the Sanskrit. Trishatam is a dvandva compound in which shatam, or hundreds, actually means 300. And he gives a rule. I don't know what the rule is. Kapish jala alabhana nyaya, parentheses, accepting partridges. Don't ask me what that nyaya is, but there's some Sanskrit rule that you're to read things in a certain way where the plural indicates three unless otherwise stated. That there's a Sanskrit rule. Don't ask me more about that. I don't understand the rule. If it is not accepted as a dvandva samasa, the word should become trishati, if it means 300, not trisham, trishatam. He's giving an argument saying it's 335, Prabhu's, confirmed by Sridhar Swami, the recognized authoritative commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam. So don't use this argument, please. Nor should the chapters be rejected because they describe that demons attain liberation, since there are many examples where Krishna gives liberation to those he kills. And to support this, he makes an interesting argument from Bhagavad Gita. Some of you know Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16. This is Divine and Demoniac chapter. The translation here, taking birth as demons, birth after birth, these fools, not contacting me, go to the lowest status of life, O son of Kunti. The verse says that those who do not attain Krishna enter hell, indicating that whereas those that do contact him get liberated. And the Bhagavatam says, we heard this reference the other day, Canto 2, that may be this morning, Canto 2, Chapter 7, where there's a list of incarnations, and specifically there's mention of Krishna as the list of incarnations, and gives some details. And the whole verse gives a long list of demons mentioned, by the way, in this long list of demons. Agasura is not listed. Here's a demon, I'll read the verse. Demons that were killed by Krishna, and then others that were killed by Balaram, and Arjuna and Bhima. Demons headed by Pralamba, Denuka, Vaka, Keshi, Arishta, the wrestlers, Kuvalyapida, Kamsa, Kalyavana, Dvidvida, Pondraka, Shalva, Narakasara, Balvala, Dantavakra, the seven bulls, Shambara, Vidurata, and Rukmi, as well as those with bow in hand, glorious in fighting on the battlefield, such as the Kambojas, Matsyas, Kurus, Srinjayas, and Kaikayas. Will attain Sayuja or Vaikuntha by the Lord. Or through his instruments, like Balaram, Arjuna, Bhima, and others. So, here's the BBT translation of that last section. The demons thus being killed would attain either the impersonal Brahmajyoti or his personal abode in the Vaikuntha planet. So there are those that object, oh, come on, Putana got this position and Agarsura got liberation, come on. So his argument is there's a whole bunch of demons killed by Krishna that got liberation, so why not? Paragraph. He's going to get to the Agasura story, but he's first going to, he's got his boxing gloves on. One cannot say, quote, these pastimes did not take place, since they are not mentioned in other Puranas. Well, the pastimes are clearly mentioned in Padma Purana, Brahmanda Purana, and others. Furthermore, places of these pastimes are well known in Vrindavan. It is also not a contradiction if the demons attain a destination similar to that of the devotees, since pure devotees do not value the liberation that the demons achieve at all. That's the Sayuja one. There are hundreds of statements like the following. Canto 3, chapter 15, the different reference from that chapter. Persons who have realized you do not regard attainment of impersonal Brahman as your mercy. What to speak of attaining a material position like Indra, which is subject to fear caused by the Lord raising his eyebrow. Devotees don't covet that which the demons get. nor did Putana become a mother equal to Yashoda. This idea is rejected by those who understand the glorification of Yashoda. And here it is, Brahma, in chapter 14, which they say is interpolated. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. That's the verse 35, chapter 14. Putana is glorified only for assuming the dress of a mother to attain the Lord. This produces greater glorification of Yashoda. She is glorified for attaining the position of a mother because she dressed like a mother at Putana. The problem is not resolved by saying that there are two souls in Putana. I don't know if that's an argument that somebody put forward. According to the saying, Tat Samsargi Cha Paschama, she had fault. Putana had fault. Thus, there is no contradiction. Rather, it produces the highest glorification of the devotees and their bhakti. This can be realized by special mercy of the Lord. Thus, Shukadeva says, the Bhagavatam's topics are confidential. And that's chapter 13, one of the chapters that they don't like. Chapter 13 comes after this chapter 12. Chapter 12, we heard, ends with Maharaj Parikshit saying, what happened to that 1 year? And 13 begins saying, these are very confidential topics. Okay. Enough of this. Let's return to the topic. Krishna had a strong desire to picnic in the forest. The previous day, he informed his friends, that they would have breakfast prepared at home and they would carry the meal to the forest. This was the first time he desired to do this. Previously, it was mentioned that he took breakfast and went to the forest. In this verse, it says, quote, one day, he desired to eat in the forest. After taking off his night clothing, washing his face, and dressing in attractive clothing, he quickly rose to his feet, left the house, and woke up the other boys. With a desire to have fun with the boys, he slowly left Braja. These herders of calves were his friends. He woke them up with joy by the pleasing charuna sound of his horn. The pleasing nature of the horn was its very svarup. He put the calves in front. He is called Hari because he was attractive to all the boys. He left Braja in a special condition. Ve nirgataha means without Balaram. Though Balaram desired to go on hearing the sound of the horn and had heard the plans from Krishna, his mother made him perform ceremonies for safety at home on the instructions of the astrologers. So that's a little different than it was his birthday. But it's important. He wasn't there. There's a reason. He wasn't there. The reason is this Brahma Vimohan Leela could take place. And so on. We'll find as we go along. So his mother made him perform ceremonies for safety at home on the instructions of astrologers. This was the main reason for him not being present there. The influence of the Leela Shakti to produce his absence in the past times was secondary, since Krishna's primary reason for going was the picnic. Whereas the killing of Agastya and Brahma's bewilderment was incidental. So we have three categories. Picnicking. Balaram wasn't there. Secondary. An incidental killing of the demons. Brahma Vimohan Leela. Main thing is picnic. Each word, sentence, verse, and topic in this pastime from beginning to end is filled with more wonder than anything previous. The pastime can be understood only by those with devotion. For fear of lengthening the discussion, nothing more will be said. And here is Sanatana Goswami, something similar, it's much shorter, less detail, but same theme. Three chapters now describe the Kumara pastimes in order. The killing of Agasura is first described. Paragraph. Some followers of Madhvacharya, who take liberation as the supreme goal, with conservative mentalities, cannot tolerate the liberation of a demon by sucking a gopi's breast and criticize statements like the description starting in Bhagavatam 10.6.35. He gave the list, it's up to 42, but here's what 35 says. Maybe I should read the whole thing. The phrase is apa sat gatim. Apa means obtained, and sat gatim. Gatim means goal. So sat gatim. She attained the greatest achievement. She attained the greatest achievement. Maybe I will read those other verses. 10.6.35-42. So these are ones that there. That's chapter 6 objections of some Madhvites. 10.6. So just read the verses. Putana was always hankering for the blood of human children. Whew. And with that desire, she came to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement, satgatim. What then can be said of those who had natural devotion and affection for Krishna as mothers, and who offered him their breasts to suck, or offered something very dear as a mother offers something to a child. Now later in Canto 3, Chapter 2, specifically, Uddhava says Putana attained the position of mother to assist Mother Jasoda in Goloka. Here it doesn't say that, it just says Swagatim. Yeah. Here in the next text, this is 37-38, it says, although she was a great witch, she attained the position of a mother in the transcendental world and thus achieved the highest perfection. And so forth. And then went to speak of those that were real mothers to Krishna. The Supreme, this is now verses 39 and 40. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the bestower of many benedictions, including liberation, Kaivalya, or oneness with the Brahman effulgence. for the personality of Godhead, the gopis always felt maternal love, and Krishna sucked their breasts with full satisfaction. Therefore, because of their relationship as mother and son, although the gopis were engaged in various family activities, one should never think that they returned to this material world after leaving their bodies. So that's the issue for some Madhvites. What happened with Putana, and similarly what happened with the gopis, the elder gopis. So now we're going back to, some followers of Madhvacharya who take liberation as the supreme goal with conservative mentalities cannot tolerate the liberation of a demon by sucking a gopi's breast and criticize statements like the description starting in what we just read, chapter 6, and then later, which say that Putana attained liberation. They can't tolerate it. Like, it's interpolated, it's just not, we reject it. This objection is not proper, since the stories are available in many scriptures and are respected by ancient and modern commentaries. He gave that list previously, like Sridhar Swami. The place where Agasura was killed, this is now Sanatan Goswami's explanation. The place where Agasura was killed, the grazing ground and the place where Brahma offered praises are well known in Vrindavan. The story is also in Padma Purana. It is not contrary to the conclusions of the great devotees, since liberation is not desirable for the devotees. That is clear everywhere in Bhagavatam. Gopis who gave Krishna their breast milk are similar to Yashoda, those verses we just read. They are dearest to the Lord, young and number in the thousands. That will become clear later. There is no contradiction. In these three chapters, the extraordinary greatness of bhakti, devotees and the Lord, and realization by the special mercy of the Lord is presented. This is confidential and is presented in the explanations of the devotees. Why discuss further? At some time, kadachit, when Krishna had reached 5 years of age, in the autumn of on some day, he became determined to go to the forest. Though the boys had eaten breakfast at home, they took all ingredients of food to the forest. Krishna, full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, has a form with limbs. There is no difference between his mind and other functions of his antakarana. Remember that antakarana term? Sum total of material impressions within the mind, within the subtle body. And there's no difference between Krishna's mind and Krishna's self. Although there is no distinction, distinction is made for certain purposes. This will be explained later. After giving up his night dress, washing his mouth, putting on clean clothes and ornaments, after getting up, he left the bedroom and woke up his friends. Wanting to go with them, he left Braja quietly. His horn had a beautiful sound, appropriate to wake up the boys with joy. Or he told them the previous day that the horn would be the signal to go for a picnic in the forest. Or charuna indicates the attractive nature of the sound. It was all always beautiful. Last paragraph. He placed the calves in front. He attracted their hearts. Hadihi. He went alone. Without Balaram, on that day. The reason will be explained later. Next chapter. What was astonishing that day was his determination to go to the forest for a picnic. Furthermore, he rose from bed without being called by his mother. And he personally woke up all the calves using the beautiful sound of his horn. And he went without his brother. And he put the calves in front. The sequence of words and phrases indicate progressively more astonishing facts. This is understood by the devotees. This will not be expanded for fear of lengthening the commentary. Go right ahead. Lengthen the commentary. So before reading this, before this evening's class, I only had an inclination that Madhvas didn't comment on the Brahmavimohan Leela. I was under the impression that they were silent. Now it's more clear, Sanatana and Jiva Goswami saying much stronger than that. They just, you know, hit the delete button and there's three less chapters of the Bhagavatam. Has anyone spent time in Udupi? Like, you know, the ashram there? Like, you know, the being with the devotees?
The temple.
Huh?
Temple.
Just the temple, Udupi Krishna. I can't remember the circumstance, but one time we not only visited Udupi Krishna, but we were with it wasn't a big, you know, yatra group. It was a smaller group. And we were treated with great respect and, you know, brought to a little, very simple room where after darshan and served prasadam in a very respectful, cordial Vaishnava way. And all the conversation was madhva, 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 madhva. Kind of like what Hare Krishna devotees do, Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. And, you know, so that has maintained over a long period of time. And so that very focused dedication to madhva and dvaitavad is very strongly inculcated, at least within the Udupi Math, the Udupi Krishna Math, the central one, and I assume it's, you know, expanded throughout. And so they also have a very, very strong dedication to Lord Brahma, because Brahma Bhadra, Sampradaya. They're respectful of the Gaudiya branch of the Madhva Sampradaya, but that's, you know, that's the mama and this is the baby over here, as far as, you know, they were viewing things. They have high regard for the bhakti of Gaudiyas, but I didn't know that they, like, had this philosophical, at least some Madhvas, doesn't say, you know, how pervasive, they just, you know, want to hit the delete button, because I knew that they had some issue about how to explain how Brahma becomes bewildered. And in his bewilderment, what he says. I mean, there's Udupi Krishna, he's at the center. But the Braja Bhakti that is found in Brahma's prayers, I want to become a blade of grass, and so forth and so on. How fortunate are the residents of Braja? And all the things that he says, it's placing Braja Prema very clearly above the platform of, you know, Vaikuntha or, you know, the understanding of Krishna in Dwarka, for example. The Braja Prema is very, very prominent in Brahma's prayers. So they what I understood is they had they didn't comment on it. But, you know, I assumed it was just like uncomfortable for them and they just didn't go there. So that, you know, there's controversy sometimes. And there's a nice verse. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'm trying to remember where it is, but Krishna Das Kaviraj is speaking about, you know, different Vaishnava teachings. Some say this and some say that and some say the other thing. And he says that one should not refrain from such discussions because such discussions help make the mind stronger. Now, Jiva Goswami's got a really strong mind because he doesn't shy away from these things. His writings, he takes it on, as they say. I found this in Tattva Sandarbha. I studied it very carefully. It's the first of the six Sandarbhas. And in two places, he takes on the Buddhists. Apparently, we commonly say, or Prabhupada would say, Shankaracharya drove out the Buddhists. And that's kind of, you know, so that Buddhism wasn't prevalent. But there still were some Buddhist traces. Otherwise, why would Jiva Goswami write about it? And in the commentary, there's a certain group of Buddhists that were prevalent at his time. And Tattva Vijnana Vadis, or Tattva Vijnana Buddhism, Jiva Goswami mentions it by name. So I did some research, and they have a certain Tattva teaching. And that group explicitly says there's no soul. Now, commonly we hear that Buddhism was silent on is there a soul or is there not a soul. But this group was specific. There's no soul. And, you know, since there's no soul, there's no consciousness. You know, they were really like total voidists. So Jiva Goswami takes them on, right, in Tattva Sandarbha, and refutes them on the authority of the Bhagavatam and the authority of logic. He's very strong. He doesn't shy away from controversy. He brings it up. Some say this. There's a phrase, Purvapaksha. You heard that phrase before? Some say, you know, the doubter group people, some people say. And he mentioned what they say. So his system, we'll get back to this. His system is, he describes his system, how he's going to conduct his system of presentation. He makes a statement. To support the statement, he refers to script text from the Bhagavatam. And then he refers to other texts that he lists where he's going to draw references from. Then he circles back and makes the statement again. And then he says some people will argue with that statement. The Purvapaksha group will say, no, 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 da-da-da-da. To them I reply. And to my reply they'll say, no, 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 and to that I'll reply. And then he goes back to the statement. It's like really, it's really standard scholarship, but he doesn't shy away from, you know, controversy. It's not like at the end of the day the person is going to say, yeah, you're right. But for those who are devotees, we're trying to be devotees, we may hear this and that. So he's preparing us for this and that. Prabhupada did something very similar. Just some sharing. In the very, very early days, there was a lot of talk about Mayavadis, and we didn't know what a Mayavadi was. And then he, as you may know, early, he didn't translate the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita, but he translated teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which includes five main Shiksha sections of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya's Shiksha or instructions to Prakashananda Saraswati, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Ramananda Roy, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Those five. That's teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It's just a retelling of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Shiksha section without the Leela parts and other important sections. And then when he started working on Chaitanya Charitamrita, he had chapter 7, which is about Lord Chaitanya's instructions with Prakashananda Saraswati about Mayavad. He had it printed in a hardback. It was like really thick. Then he printed it in a softback. And then he had sections of that included in Back to Godhead magazine. He really wanted to prepare us, knowing what we didn't know, that we would have encounters with people that would hold and even profess explicit Mayavad teachings. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desatarine. It's not determined for sure, but everyone thinks Prabhupada wrote that prana mantra for himself, because who spoke Sanskrit at that early stage? And that was his contribution. One of his outstanding contributions was to, you could say, expand personalism, which means counteract the impersonalism. So he would bring it up. He brought up some other controversies, science and other things and other things. But a strong acharya knows his audience, and the strong acharya, knowing his audience, will prepare his audience for controversy. Not shy away from it. But here's how you can understand this type of controversy. Jiva Goswami goes into details, as we see. Sanatan Goswami was a little less detailed, just speaking in principle, authoritatively. But so we're entering into a nice chapter 12, the killing of Agasura. And it's one of the demons that Kamsa sent. Specifically, it is said in the Bhagavatam and in other Puranas, Agasura was a brother. He was the younger brother of Baka. And Baka and Agasura were brothers of their elder sister, Putana. I know a devotee who's this week in India. He's translating, just a little sharing. He's a disciple of Radha Govinda Maharaj. He's translating a commentary of Hari Shuri, who was a contemporary of Jiva Goswami and wrote commentary in glorification of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the 10th canto. And so he's translating from Sanskrit. He's a Sanskrit scholar. This weekend he's speaking on the Putana story. He shared this with me as I asked for his help with translating from Sanskrit something. So in Hari Shuri's, about 6 months ago or so, I had this question. why was it that the first demon that Ram killed and the first demon that Krishna killed was a woman? You ever heard that question before? And so I asked the scholarly group and nobody knew. But this devotee knew. Let me see if I can get the wording from Hari Shuri. Well, I can't find it right now. If Juna Jivana is on this, hearing this class, Juna Jivana, please send it because I know you have it because you did this once before. When I couldn't remember. Here it is. Here we go. No. Sorry, I can't find it. Did Jamuna Jivana send in his reply?
I've asked
him. Huh?
I've asked him.
Thank you. So we'll get the answer. So I got lost. I forgot my train of thought, so we'll just go into discussion. Any discussion from anybody on this nice topic of chapter 12 introduction? Yeah.
This is more so like related to like sampradayas.
Sampradayas.
And so we see like there's a Brahma Madhava, like Sampradaya and Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. And how do these like denominations happen?
How does what?
How do these branches, how do these branches get created?
How do you manage to create it? Well, we'll take the four. Madhva took teachings from previous persons in disciplic succession. Now, his Vyas is Madhva's direct connection. So what Brahma did was he gathered together, he had a vast library. Unfortunately, it was a fire in his vast library, but he gathered up scriptures and made commentaries based on those scriptures that our present acharyas don't have the text, but they, on the authority of Madhva, they accept. And Madhva established a comprehensive explanation of Vedanta Sutra. He went all the way to where Srila Vyasadeva is in the upper Badri, higher realms, and got confirmation from him. That's in his biography. Other sampradayas, they have previous teachers and they just gather the teachings in a comprehensive, cohesive manner, matched it up with Vedanta Sutra, and they became then the head of that sampradaya. Brahma, Madhva. This is why the Brahma connection is so important for the Madhvas. How can he become bewildered and so forth? So, Sri Sampradaya, similarly, you know, without going into details. If you want the details, there's a nice little book written by Bhaktisiddhanta that goes into details. Each of the four Sampradayas, their entire disciplic succession, the essential teachings within that Sampradaya. But you're asking the procedure of how it took place.
Why does that occur? Because isn't it the same?
Why?
Why?
There's different visions of the absolute truth in disciplic succession. Mm-hmm. Some emphasize this, some emphasize that. Some like pizza and some like pakoras. And you offer to Krishna. They have a different, so there's an emphasis on something, and a mood that goes with that emphasis on that something.
So then, what's like the main difference between like Brahma Madhava Gaudiya and then Brahma Madhava?
It's the similarity is this absolute truth is a person. And he's to be, it's through bhakti, devotion to that supreme person, perfection can be reached. That's the similarity. A difference, there's a number of differences, and if you look at this book of Bhaktisiddhanta, you'll find out some details. But, the emphasis of, the most outstanding one was Dvaitavad, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Achintya Beda, Abheda Tattva emphasis. And the Achintya Beda, Abheda Tattva emphasis, it has to do with Sambandha, the relationship of all things with the source of emanation. But it then leads to more detail about rasa and the intimacy of the rasa of Braja. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has that emphasis, and it's rooted in Vedanta Sutra and how to view Vedanta Sutra. So Vedanta Sutra has Sambandha. So the readings of what's the relationship of all things, where there's this Dvaitavad, that's the Madhva view, and the difference and non-difference view. So that's a significant. Than having Radha by the side of Krishna. Udupi Krishna doesn't have Radha by the side of Krishna. There's some people ask, this is a detail, some people ask, with Udupi Krishna, where's the Shakti? Anyway, I'll send you a little, remind me, and I'll send you a little article. I asked that question of our deity worship minister, Jayananda. Did he come for the deity installation? Jayananda? Someone came. Jayananda came? Brahma Muhurta or Jayananda? Jayananda. So I wrote to Jayananda. I mean, I'm just curious about this, but I wrote to him. He wasn't sure. He wrote to his colleague, ISKCON colleague in South India. His ISKCON colleague in South India wasn't sure. So he wrote to a Sri Vaishnava pundit who he has a relationship with and just asked an open-ended question. Why do we see that the Madhvas and the Ramanujacharya followers don't have the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, next to the deity? There's like a very non-abrasive, very neutral, very reasonable explanation of, yes, we do. And then there's something from the Agamas that Madhva accepted, that in addition, Lakshmi has her own special place of worship. It's in the Agamas. That's a section of the Vedas that deals with worship. So that's what they do, and that's what the Sri Vaishnavas do. So I'll send you. So there's differences in deity worship connected to the view of Sambandhagyan. And then Abhideya, the worship. And then Prayojana, the goal. So there's variations on the theme of those three, but the scripture is the same, and some have a more prominent emphasis on Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana than Bhagavat Purana, for example. And then details of worship in the Agamas and the Pancharatras. But, you know, there's one Supreme Lord, he's a person, we're meant to serve him, we have an eternal relationship with him, that's our goal of life. That's the harmony. And it evolves through time and moods of love, moods of bhakti. But in this descending fashion, not the other way. Okay? Ah, please come forward because I don't know if the microphone cord is long enough.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much.
You got to take your mask off so I can hear your voice better. Thank
Hare
you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for a wonderful class. I was just trying to understand that when you read out, so they have this Madhvas, they have this...
Some
of the Madhvas, they have opposition for the Brahma Vimochan Lila, but you also mentioned about, when you read about gopis and Putana and Aga. So is it specific to a few demons they have this? Because there's so many demons Krishna killed, and as we read, they all got... Sahaja Mukti, and is there any specific reason which is mentioned there, like they are against? Few are all these pastimes are mentioned in those three chapters, which I have not read, of course.
I'm not sure what your question is. They're not objecting to the Bhagavatam. They're not objecting to gopis. They're not objecting to the other chapters. They have objections to what we're hearing. This is new to me. Yeah. So I can only share with you what I just read. My understanding of what I just read, they have objection to demon-like Putana going to the spiritual world and having, you know, an intimate relationship as a mother. They have that, like, they can't swallow that. Therefore, because it doesn't match what their qualification is to go there, so that's what I get out of it. And then the other is, some other details that's their philosophical objection supporting the idea that these must be interpolated and therefore we just like dismiss them. That's what scholars have a tendency to do. Call it a bad name and hang it. So they don't like those sections. And they have their reasons why they don't like them. They feel it's not right. And they just reduce the number of chapters of the Bhagavatam. So, now your specific question is what?
No, Maharaj, that explains, Maharaj. So that is my, like, so they have objection for all the demons because they also got Sahaja Vimukti or just...
332 chapters are good.
Yeah, okay. So just that was objection for Putana.
With a little exception to some passages from chapter 6.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Maharaj. So you mentioned that Brahma says that during his bewilderment that he uses the term he wishes to be a blade of grass, you know, in Raja. And
chapter 14, Brahma makes that prayer.
Yeah. And even Lord Chaitanya, you know, he says... I think it's Trinada piece in each chain. I think he wants to be assembled as a blade of grass. So my question is...
No, not exactly. But go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. Oh, sorry. So my question is these two personalities using the term blade of grass just coincidence, or is there emphasis of them using the term blade of grass in terms of their realization?
No. There's two more that use that phrase. When Brahma doesn't say blade of grass. Brahma says take birth of some kind, any kind, where the dust from the feet of the resident of Braja can fall on my head. Uddhava says blade of grass. Uddhava. And Raghunath Das Goswami, he uses that same trin example with the blade of grass in my mouth. Prabhupada's actually said, I wish to get the dust from the feet of Rupa Goswami birth after birth. That's a verse by Raghunath Das. So the blade of grass in mouth, Prabhupada has explained, it's a classic expression of humility. So one showing extreme humility takes, it's a cultural thing, not a realization thing. A blade of grass in the teeth. I'm coming in this totally submissive, humble mood. But, you know, specific to Uddhava, it's a blade of grass. Specific to Brahma, it's any living entity. Get the dust. With Lord Chaitanya, it's the classic mood of humility. It's not the realization of something special about. Here's Dinabandhu. You know Dinabandhu? Prabhupada disciple Dinabandhu in Vrindavan? Everybody knows him. So he says, grass, if you step on it, it bends, but then it'll come back up again. But straw stays down. That's Dinabandhu. So it's not grass, it's straw. Stay down. It's an expression of humility. It's not exactly a realization. It's a cultural nuance that says so insignificant and prostrated before everybody. It's the nuance, not the realization. Okay?
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else back there? You're okay. All right. So then let's see if there's something online. Do you have something? No, okay.
This is from Rishi Pandya saying, demons like Agasura and Bakasura merged in Krishna after death. Were they part of impersonal Brahman or went to Golok Dham?
Impersonal Brahman. And,
the next question is from Sanchari Dasi. How did the concept of Radharani's position come into the Madhava line? I'm blanking on the name of the personality. But did our specific bhakti tradition get revealed just prior to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance?
Yes. Madhavendra Puri. That's the origin. It wasn't prevalent until Madhavendra Puri. It wasn't even evident. And the seed is through Madhavendra Puri. And she can read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a certain verse that he would recite over and 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 over to his final days. A verse that's the mood of Radharani in her feelings of love in separation from Krishna. He entered into that mood deeply, profoundly. And then that mood of love through Ishwara Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was already there, but that's the line of the awakening of that love. The seed was through Madhavendra Puri. She can read that section. It's described very nicely in Chaitanya Charitamrita with some degree of elaboration. Next.
There's no other question.
That's it? Okay.
I'm trying to understand. I understand why we have the different sampradayas, but once we have a sampradaya, I'm trying to understand why we have different branches in the sampradaya again.
Well, are you specifically saying why Lord Chaitanya in the line of Madhva? Are you asking that question?
That and in general, Maharaj.
Well, let's be specific rather than general. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because general could mean there's more emphasis over here on deity worship, more emphasis over there on Harikatha, more emphasis over there on Kirtan. There's a certain style of Kirtan that Narottam Das Thakur had become very expert in, and he expanded the limb or the branch of Lord Chaitanya's tree to that mood of Kirtan and the style of Kirtan. So it's an emphasis of a power acharya that may make some emphasis over here like this and some emphasis over there like that. And thus just it's a matter of emphasis, not a matter of teaching. It's a matter of style and emphasis. That's general. What's essential is that the teaching remains intact through generations, although there may be some emphasis over here on this and some emphasis over there on that.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So we have a morning Bhagavatam call, like we were reading one verse every day. So now we're in the 7th canto, 2nd chapter and 45th verse, and we were struggling to understand this purport in which Srila Prabhupada specifically says, here he says, in conclusion, the individual soul is different from the body, senses, living force, and the airs within the body. And above him is the super soul who gives the individual soul all facilities. So the question is, generally we refer soul as...
What's the verse number? 7-2?
7-2-45. The last...
Okay. I'll just pull it up on my computer. Okay, so now your question is...
Generally we refer to soul as living force. But specifically here, Srila Prabhupada is saying, individual soul is different from the body, senses, living force, and the airs within the body.
Yeah, because the Sanskrit is prana. The Sanskrit of the verse is prana, deha, yo, life, air, and deha. That's the body. There's dehi and there's deha. So it's the body and prana. So prana isn't the soul. The life force, one might say, prana is not spiritual. Prana is material. Right?
Mm.
And so there's life force that's energized by the soul. But the life force is prana. So if you want to understand what's the distinction between prana as the life force and the soul as the life force, keeping it really simple, one animates the other. Without the soul, the prana, it does nothing. And the prana can do something animated by the soul. So one may use the language life force to apply to both, but it's not equal. One's material, the other's the basis and support, the spiritual life force. The body moves because of the movement of life air within the body. Right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah. So now, go ahead.
So, basically because the doubt came because Srila Prabhupada is mentioning living force and as well as the airs within the body. So, we thought like life air is what is pranavayu, we thought like, but living force, he said, is different from soul. So, and many places also like Srila Prabhupada has quoted that the soul is the living force within the body.
So are you reading the verse or are you reading the purport?
In the purport, last part, Srila Prabhupada.
Okay, purport, last part.
In conclusion, he says.
Okay. Although the individual soul possesses the indriyas or senses, he is not actually the proprietor, for the proprietor is the supersoul. Consequently, the supersoul is called Rishikesh, and the individual soul is advised by the direction of supersoul to surrender to him and thus be happy. Thus he can become immortal. You don't become immortal, it's language, but, and be transferred to the spiritual kingdom where he will achieve the highest success, etc. In conclusion, the individual soul is different from the body, senses, living force, and airs within the body. Well, so you're now living force and airs within the body, why is that? That's one phrase. You could put the living individual soul is different from the body, comma, senses, comma, living force, comma, and the airs within the body. But it doesn't put a comma. Prana has different types of prana, right?
Prana, those life
airs. Yes. So prana is the general category, and then there's the divisions of that general category. That's one way to read what it says here. I'm not saying that's definitive, but you look at the Sanskrit of the text, and it's prana and deha. So it's not separate, there's the life force, and over there there's airs within the body, and altogether different is the soul. So that's my take on your question, or the question you asked about the purport. And above him is the super soul. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So you said about how in Buddhism, like, they say that there's no soul, and then Jiva Goswami, he argues against it. So I was just, like, wondering, like, in summary, like, what does he say about that?
Okay. He doesn't argue with anything, but he doesn't shy away from controversy. Because some things are not worthy of taking on. But apparently it was a strong group, and the strong group was saying, "There's no soul, period." So there's two different ways that, because he takes it up twice. Now I'm dredging my memory, but he refers to certain passages from Uddhava Gita, from the 11th canto portion of the Bhagavatam, where he speaks of the properties of the soul as consciousness. And then there's another place, so it's like explicit. So on the authority, because at the very beginning of Tattva Sandarbha, he's established the authority of the Bhagavatam to understand anything. Certainly to understand transcendence, but to understand anything. So the Bhagavatam says the soul is conscious, explicitly. That's how he just dismisses it because it doesn't match this authority. They have their idea, okay. That this is their idea. And here's what the authority says. Then there's another section, he takes it on again, and it's very complicated. I had to read it multiple times, so I can't, it's just like, what's he saying here? But it's indirect, as opposed to that one. The first one is very direct. And I'd have to go back and look at it to explain it to you, or to, you know, to even just to find it right now and read it to you. It's like, huh? Because it's indirect. But this is correct, and this is correct. So we can't infer there's no soul, or there's no conscious entity within, because of this and this. You can't infer that. It's an indirect argument based upon some understandings of the Bhagavatam. If you like, I'll be happy to find the section and just forward it to you. Would you like that? I'll send it to your dad and he can make sure you get it. Okay.
Maharaj, this Dvaita philosophy, does it mean that two means the Supreme Lord is different and the Jiva is different?
The doctrine of Dvaitavad has five, not just one. Panchabheda, he called it. So to go Dvaitavad, it's five things that are eternally different. Let's see if I can remember them. Living entity and God. Living entities and living entities. Living entities and Prakriti. Prakriti and Prakriti. Prakriti and God. They're distinct tattvas. And that was a theme that he just like beat the drum and blared the trumpet and over and over and over. So, because he was strongly against Mayavad.
So, like, Prakriti and Prakriti means like.
There's varieties of Prakriti.
And, okay.
Earth is not fire, it's not water. I mean, how they come into being is one thing. But their properties are different. There's a different tattva. They exist as different tattvas. Dvaita.
Yes. And this is something that I don't know. The Vishishta Dvaita that Ramanujacharya talks.
Yes.
How is that different here?
Vishishta means attribute. So, inherently within the Vishnu, there are Vishishtas. Advaita, there is the relationship between those Vishishtas and their source. Advaita. So everything is out there and everything can be redrawn, but the relationship is a relationship of oneness between the source of everything and everything. Vishishta Advaita. Dvaita. You follow? When you're like, how do these? It's in Sambandha. And Sambandha leads to Abhideya. It leads to Prayojana.
So Vishishta means the jiva is also considered.
We're inherently within. We're one with the Supreme.
Okay.
The emphasis is not and simultaneously different. We're used to hearing that.
The achintya bhava.
We're one with
yeah.
and different from. It's not straight Shuddha Advaita. Excuse me. Kevala Advaita. Yeah, that's monism. It's Vishishta Advaita. There are attributes. You know, the Mayavadi say, no attributes. Everything is one. He would say, oh, there's attributes. Inherently within, and sometimes.
So is it right to understand that the jiva is an attribute of Vishnu? That's
the Sri Vaishnava view.
Okay.
Everything is an attribute of Vishnu. There isn't a separateness of anything from Vishnu. But there are attributes, and they're real.
Yes.
They're tattvas. They're real. They're attributes. They're vishishtas.
So that this is like more closer to what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented, achintya beja, beda beda.
It's a combination of the two. It's closer to Sri Vaishnavism in Siddhanta. Anyway, this is getting technical. Are we done? Anything online? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.